particularly in government, betting on innovation is a risky thing to do for a government official and government cycles. It's a lot easier to get in trouble for doing something wrong than take the risk to do it right. So how do you de-risk as much as possible so that government implementers have confidence in the solution in a way that allows them to take that risk? Government can become a partner and you have the right advocates, then it'll become much easier for social innovators from civil society to integrate with government and come up with better solutions. So this is an area at Skoll we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to make the most impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Borelovitz. Those in the social sector know that implementing a scalable solution comes with a set of tremendous challenges. But what if these solutions ultimately need to be integrated within a government system? What should be the mindset of leaders as they explore government partnerships? How different should the approach be compared to scaling in the private sector? To help answer these questions and share wisdom from an extensive career in public service, finance, business, and technology, is the CEO of the Skoll Foundation, Don Gipps. The Skoll Foundation is an organization founded by Jeff Skoll in 1999, which champions social entrepreneurs and social innovators who work on solutions to the world's most pressing problems. For this episode, I asked Mohammed Osman, who leads Spring Impact operations in the UK, to lead this conversation. Mohammed brings over 20 years' experience as a non-profit executive, including his previous role as the Global Grants Director at the Elton John AIDS Foundation. Mohammed talked to Don about his expansive journey in social change, including lessons on timing and power when working with governments.
My whole career has actually been multi-sector. I love working with people who inspire me and working on problems that can make a difference in the world. And government of all those places is one of those places you can have the biggest impact on the largest number of people. It also can be frustrating, challenging, but the opportunity to, you know, work with Vice President Gore, which I was able to do in the Clinton administration, and then work for President Obama, first as head of presidential personnel, and then as ambassador to South Africa, were just incredibly rewarding experiences to be able to make a difference in the world. And, you know, it's being in government is probably the toughest problem solving that you face because you have to consider all constituencies and try and find that balance. But it's also one of the most rewarding things I've done.
One of your earliest professional experiences was helping design and create a $650 million startup government corporation to promote community service, which became America Corps program. What were your goals and what challenges did you face, if any, doing this?
Yeah, I mean, the work on America is one of the things I'm most proud of in my career. And it really, to be able to work with the team that was designing this program and really building on the work of great social innovators, the people at Citi or the people at Teach for America, Public Allies, who already had this vision and then bringing it to scale through government really was an example of some of the best integration of public and private that I've ever been a part of. And when we designed it, it really was trying to make sure that we didn't create a big new government bureaucracy, but we found a way to support the entrepreneurial models that were already out there and to marry them with government resources at scale. And the other thing that we did, which is why I think the program is still there, is it really was a bridge-building program. It was meant to be bipartisan. It was meant to be state, local, private sector supported as well as national. It was a design principle from day one. And it enabled us to provide fuel to the great social entrepreneurs innovators who are out there in the country to hopefully make a difference in society and bring people together and doing it. And I think that's one of the reasons it has survived to this day. And it really was built from the beginning to be an all of society approach to changing our country.
During the Obama presidency, Don served as the US ambassador to South Africa. In his role, Don managed a staff of more than 1,000 people and a budget of over $600 million across multiple government agencies. With his prolific experience working within and alongside governments, Don believes that the most valuable skill to harness is listening.
I believe this is applicable, and it's in my career, whether in the private sector, government, or the nonprofit sector. I think putting yourselves in the shoes of the people that you're, or trying to put yourselves in the shoes, you can never do it completely, but the people you're working with or the people you're trying to convince of something, understanding what their challenges are, what their incentives are, is critical. And, you know, I found that to be incredibly true as ambassador, to really listen to whoever the South African civil society leader or business leader or government official was across the table from me, listening to where they were coming from, trying to understand what the barriers they faced were, what the incentives they had. I think that's core to problem solving. And some of the people we fund who are, I call them systems orchestrators, have become really good at this, at really looking across the whole system and trying to understand the incentives of all the players, whether they're government, the NGOs, the private sector players, because that's how you can build these solutions that bridge across them all and can scale.
Could you share with us important lessons you've learned about scaling impact, especially when you're at AmeriCorps?
Look, I think if scaling impact were easy, we'd all be much better at it than we are. But it really, if you design from the beginning with an idea to how this, whatever your solution is, can be scaled, and whether that's through the government, whether that's through markets, or whether that's through philanthropy, having that vision from day one, I think helps you build a model that works. And most social innovations are addressing either a government failure or a market failure. And part of the reason social innovators have been successful at coming up with these models is they're not bound by any of the restrictions that those other entities are. But then you still have to think about, okay, as I scale, if I'm going to incorporate this into the larger system, how am I going to do that? What are the trade-offs those people are going to face as they think about adopting my program? Remembering that particularly in government, betting on innovation is a risky thing to do for a government official, and government cycles, it's a lot easier to get in trouble for doing something wrong than take the risk to do it right. So how do you de-risk as much as possible so that government implementers have confidence in the solution in a way that allows them to take that risk?
Don shares why de-risking is critical in building government partnerships.
I think this is one of the roles of philanthropy, which is to really help prove out these models and show the cost benefit of adopting it. And it varies depending on the sector you're in. You know, in health, you can, in education, you can do RCTs or other ways of measuring the impact. If you're talking about bigger systems change, that becomes harder. But the core piece of this is philanthropy can build these models. And then we have to help government understand where they can take over and help fund them, or the private sector, where that makes sense. And this is an area that Skoll and others are still investing in. And I think the more you can build coalitions where government is engaged early on in the design process, the more likelihood that it can be adopted by them.
Many partners who want to work with the government struggle with the question of how early do you bring in the government into projects? What's your advice around when should they bring in the government and how should they bring in the government?
You know, the old African proverb, you can go fast if you go alone, but you can go far if you go together, I think is really true. I think if you bring in government too early, your model, you know, it may slow you down too much. But I believe that if the ultimate solution you're working on requires government for scale, then you need to consider what the incentives of the government players you're trying to reach out to will be from day one. Whether you engage them right away or not is a question that I think you have to answer with each individual situation. Is there somebody who's the right person to engage early on, or do you need to have some more proof before you can engage them? But I think at its core, if that is how you hope to grow in the end, you have to design in upfront what that pathway will look like.
What do you think are the biggest barriers to stop organizations from integrating with government systems?
Government systems, it's such a broad term, so you got to like break it down. And it really depends, you know, if are you trying to change a law? And that requires a very different approach to, are you trying to get a solution that you have funded by an agency? Those are very different tactics. So you need to think through, in all cases, who's going to be opposed to this? Who are you taking power from? Because much of this often will be shifting power. Or is it a win-win solution where everybody's better off? And then you just need to be able to demonstrate that and get access to the right decision makers in government. So I don't think there's a generic answer to that. I think you really have to sort of say, where am I trying to go with this? What are the barriers to being able to do that? You know, is it a political issue? Is it a economic issue? And then how do I convince those players? And, you know, you have to understand who all the stakeholders that you need to bring to that table are, what their needs are, and find the right path through that to get there, including those who are going to be opposed to you, so you know how to address, you know, whether they're entrenched interests, or in some cases you may be dealing with corrupt officials, whatever it may be. You have to design to address those challenges. I think the other thing is you have to spend the resource and time. If that really is your objective, you need to invest in it in a meaningful way if you're going to achieve that level of success.
Once you overcome the barriers to building government partnerships, leaders also need to look into a different approach to scaling their solutions.
Yeah, you know, in the private sector, there's a very sort of defined model where you go from angel investment to venture capital to, you know, private equity or going public. And it's a very structured system. In civil society, we don't have that. We don't have like a clear market structure. I think, you know, there are funders who do early stage, there are funders who come in at middle stage, there's now big bet philanthropy, and then there's government adoption. And I think this is an area where all of us in philanthropy, I think, need to continue to focus on, and how do we build that sort of laddering effect so organizations can keep growing and hit that scale? And how do we bring government into the conversation so that government is willing to bet on some of those solutions? And Sam Powers, who's the head of USAID, just gave a speech at Georgetown where she talked about how USAID needs to start shifting and figuring out how to invest in more proximate solutions in the countries they're working in, because those are more enduring and lasting. So I think there's signs of this awakening starting to happen. And we have someone like Sam, who's at the top of one of the major bilateral aid organizations, advocating for this. And you've got UNDP, Joachim Steiner, also advocating for this type of approach to invest in more proximate solutions. And government can become a partner, and you have the right advocates, then it will become much easier for social innovators from civil society to integrate with government and come up with better solutions. So this is an area at Skoll we're spending a lot of time trying to figure out. And I think it's an important part of how we create in the social entrepreneurial sector the same thing that already exists in the entrepreneurial sector, a sort of clear way for organizations to go from startup to scaling to adoption. And the more pathways we can create for that, the better.
There's a point that you made, which I would like to go back to. You discussed the issue of power, you know, when you partner with governments. Is it an equal partnership? Are you taking away power, or is it a win-win? Could you elaborate more on that, please?
there are solutions where you've invented a better widget for whatever it is, for educating children, for healthcare delivery, that are truly win-wins. Even then, there will probably be people who will lose because whoever was supporting the old system will push back. So you need to be aware of that. There are other things where you are shifting power. If you're working on democracy, you may be shifting power from people who don't want that democracy, and you have to be ready to have that fight. And I think the core skill set for a social innovator is really being able to identify what are the challenges to achieving the vision I have. And that almost always involves power in one way or another. Sometimes it may just be explaining why this is a better way to go, but other times it really will be, how do I align enough people on my side to shift so that this solution can be adopted? But it's very case specific.
No, that's a very helpful insight on its own. For many people who feel like if you need to work with the government, you need to have an equal partnership between the government, the investor or the foundation, and the implementer. And often this is not the real world. It doesn't often work like that. Which two of those relationships do you think are most important to establish initially as you work with the government in scaling impact?
If you want to scale impact, you have to understand the incentives of the people on the other side of the table. And how do you literally put yourselves in their shoes as much as you can and understand what risks is this person taking by supporting what I want them to do? And how can I de-risk this for them? What can I do that takes some of that away from them? How can I use philanthropy to help do that? And then how do I celebrate them for taking those risks? You know, I think one of the old sayings in Washington is it's amazing how much you can get done if you don't take credit for anything. And so I think that resonates here. And a number of the systems orchestrators we work with, and one of the organizations we work with sponsored a crisis action, wrote a book on how to be a systems orchestrator, a little pamphlet. And one of the things they noted in that book is quite often being behind the scenes is the best way to achieve that. If you're taking the credit, that may not make people want to work with you. So, you know, I think that is another piece of the toolkit. You know, you got to take enough credit that you keep getting funded. I'd say the other challenge is for philanthropy to recognize that, you know, too often we look for, you know, I want to know the direct impact you're having. When if you're trying to change a system, you can't get direct attribution because the system's too big. You're trying to give credit to other people. And instead of, you know, which too often we can do in philanthropy, creating a race between our grantees, you want to create a relay race where they're handing off the baton to each other. By the way, I didn't make that up. Safina Hussein, who's one of our grantees, told this to me. How do we as philanthropists and philanthropy incent people to work together? Because that's the only way we're going to solve these problems. And that requires us to think about how we evaluate ourselves as well.
The Skoll Foundation drives transformational change by investing, connecting, and championing social innovators. Since its founding, the Skoll Foundation has invested approximately $1 billion across 200 organizations worldwide.
Skoll is a platform that Jeff Skoll had the vision to create over 20 years ago to really, at that point, build out the field of social entrepreneurship, which was a very nascent term at the time. From its early days, it invested and connected and celebrated these social entrepreneurs. And we do everything from providing funding, usually to an entrepreneur who's got a proven model that is ready for scale. So that's where we have focused, to giving the Skoll Award every year, which celebrates some of the great social innovators. And over the last 2 years, we've shifted our strategy to really focus in on five areas that we think are critical to bending the arc on some of the challenges facing our society, which are democracy, pandemics and health system strengthening, racial justice, climate and inclusive economic growth. those are the areas we focus on, and we use the Invest, Connect, and Champion assets that we have to give the power to the people who've got the great ideas to go challenge those, at the same time trying to center equity in everything we do so that we're not the ones providing the answers. We're trying to work with those who are closest to these problems, let them come up with the answers, and then help them with our networks and our funding and our storytelling capabilities.
Jeff Skoll created a portfolio of philanthropic and commercial enterprises with distinct functions, including media company Participant and Capricorn Investment Group. As Skoll Foundation evolves, Don shares that there is an opportunity for them to work closely with their sister organizations and maximize their platforms, as well as focus on working with the government.
We've just hired our first person to focus exclusively on how to build more government partnerships and how to do this scaling, because I think it's a missing piece in philanthropy. In the private sector, there's a whole group of people who all they do, all their time is, they're called lobbyists, but all their time is spent helping private sector companies figure out how to influence government to adopt whatever it is they want adopted. I think in civil society, we need to do more of that to figure out how do we get some of these solutions adopted, which really in many, almost all cases are win-win. That's why we're backing them in the first place.
Finally, Don shares some great advice for change agents who are on their journey to impact.
It's funny because they're the ones teaching me lessons every day. These are some of the most inspiring people I work with, and it's what gives me my energy to keep doing this job, is to hear their solutions, to see their visions for change. And I think the only advice that I have is, like, also make sure they take care of themselves on that journey, their own well-being, because these are not sprints, they're marathons that all of them are on. And, you know, we've just are living through this horrible pandemic that I think, if anything, has exposed the inequities in the world in an even more stark way. And said this in other conversations, but, you know, COVID is, we've all gone through the same storm, but we've been in very different boats. And I think it's taken a toll on all of us, but some much more than others. And many of the people that we fund in our portfolio are at the front lines. And they're not, you know, when there's a fire, these are the people who don't run from the fire, they run in to help put the fire out. So I hope that they also find the time to protect their own well-being on that journey. And we're just honored to be able to help them fight those fires.
I learned a huge amount from Don and Mohammed's conversation about how partnerships with governments can work in practice. It's clear that making government a central part of strategy is critical if we're to achieve lasting impact at scale. Spring Impact, with funding from Skoll Foundation, created a practical guide to the journey to scale with government. A link to that and to the Skoll Foundation's website is in the show notes. That's it from us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe or follow our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate us and give us a review. If you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll catch you all in the next episode.